Okay, welcome back to another episode of Tarpon World Radio. I don't think Robert likes my selection of music here, but...
No, it's not bad at all. They actually kind of remind me a little bit of the Violent Femmes.
Oh, yeah.
Similar.
Yeah, this is Cake Never There. And this is Tarpon World Radio with Captain Barry Baruti, and I'm with Robert Lugowitz once again for part two of Mastering Bait and the Charlotte Harbor. So, on our last episode, we were talking about scaled sardines, also known as green bags.
Pilchards, white bait,
yeah, all those greenies. I just drew a blank on that one. And then we also have the second bait fish we talked about, which were thread fins, and the third was pinfish.
Uh-huh.
So, what would you say in order is going to be like a good coming in at number four for the most commonly used bait in our area?
Well... I mean, shrimp's going to top number one, period.
Actually, yeah.
You know, I mean, shrimp in Florida, but especially the west coast of Florida, is kind of like everybody's night crawler up north.
Exactly. That's a really good way to put it.
You know, it works year-round. It works live or dead. You know, you can catch anything on it from small fish to giant fish. You know, it's just, that should honestly be the number one bait, but... As far as, you know, because there are seasons here, contrary to, you know, we don't have the leaves changing, we don't have the snow, we don't have all that stuff, but we do have a winter, spring, summer, and a fall, just not to the extent of, that people are used to associating it with, but fish notice subtle temperature changes, but they also go heavily on photo periods.
Yes.
And photo periods are the same in wintertime as they are in this, you know, up north. You know, you have longer days in the summertime, shorter days in the wintertime.
Right. What I was going to clarify what photo periods means is like when you have daylight saving times, when the days get shorter during the winter and in the summer when they're longer. That's what you mean by photo periods, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Like in July, you have almost 12 hours of basically daylight. Mm-hmm. And then in the wintertime, you pretty much have about what? 8.5 hours of daylight.
Exactly.
Give or take.
Yep.
You know, so the fish get used to that, and that can cause a lot of different instinctual things, whether it's breeding, feeding habits, all that stuff. So that's why shrimp will work all year round, but in the summertime it doesn't work as good as the white bait, because the white bait or bait fish become much more plentiful, and also our bigger shrimp start to migrate offshore in July because of the rainy season, hot weather.
Exactly.
The moon phase moves those bigger shrimp into the deeper offshore waters, and then your bait fish move into the inshore shallower waters, so you kind of have a little bit of a shift change or changing of the guards, so to say.
Yeah.
And you kind of match the hatch. You know, there's a lot more bait fish around, so the fish are going to be focused on that.
Yes.
Versus in the wintertime, the bait fish leave for the most part, but the shrimp come back, so the fish are more focused on shrimp than they are the bait fish.
Exactly.
So you still want to kind of match the hatch throughout the year, and depending on species, you know, because you and I have been doing this for quite some time, so we have, like, obviously our favorite fish to catch, but we also like to kind of understand the behaviors of all these different fish. So you take, let's pick on tarpon, because tarpon are here, yeah, right now, and that's one of the really sought after species of fish,
yeah,
for a lot of folks who travel to Florida.
Mm-hmm. Especially Boca Grande, it's like tarpon capital of the world.
Exactly. And let's take Boca Grande and Charlotte Harbor. I'm not going to pick on any of the other areas because they're all a little different.
Okay.
When the tarpon first show up here in usually late April.
Yep. Depending on the cold fronts. That's, yes, a huge factor there.
Yes.
They could show up even I know April Fool's Day, I've hooked them in the past, like,
yeah,
first day of April. But
we've had them in as early as March and even February, you know, but mm-hmm, realistic numbers, end of April.
Yes, okay.
That's actually where you can kind of, like, if you're planning your year-long vacation and you want to come down here to fish for tarpon, May's your best month to say absolutely they're here.
Yes.
But end of April, when those fish first show up here, two really popular food sources that they really like to hit on, whether they're on the beach or at the mouth of Boca Grande Pass, is mullet and shrimp. And that's because there's a ton of shrimp here that they're feeding on naturally. But mullet also work fairly well because the direction that the tarpon are migrating from is from south to north to come to our area. And when they're coming across from the Keys through the Everglades and hit all that area down there, there's an abundance of mullet.
Tons of mullet.
So they're really still focused a little bit on that in their brain for their feeding pattern. So they turn on to those mullet. But then we get this huge crab, or a lot of these little crabs that start to flow through Boca Grande Pass starting in May.
Yes.
And those fish will transition over into a major feed on crabs. And then the thread fins will start to show up a little bit, and they'll switch over to that a little bit. And then throughout the summertime, they're feeding mostly on the thread fins and pinfish. And then towards the fall, which usually for us starts in late August and September,
yes,
for tarpon fishing, they'll switch over to ladyfish, which would probably be the fifth bait of choice for a lot of different things.
That's so here. Cool how you just tied in like one fish into the different times of year and all the bait species we've talked about. How right. like they kind of all transition through all different ones of those top four bait fish we've mentioned, whether it be shrimp, scaled sardines, I think you can throw in with thread fins.
Mm-hmm.
The pinfish, same as well. And then work your way down to, you know, crabs and then into ladyfish. I mean, that's just, it's just an example of fishing one bait and it, throughout the entire year might not always produce. You have to be aware of what time of year it is and what the fish are, like, what's their primary goal and what they're feeding on.
Right, and it might produce, but it's not going to maybe necessarily produce either quantity or quality.
Right, I shouldn't say, yeah, that's a very good caveat.
But well, you're right to an extent. You know, mm-hmm. we're both right in that aspect because some people are like, well, I went out and caught one redfish today using this bait. Well, if you would have been using it 2 months from now, you probably would have caught 30 on it because that's what they really want that time of year.
Yes.
So it still works, just not as well.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, ladyfish is a... How would you describe a ladyfish?
I would describe a ladyfish as, number one, just one of the most fun fish to catch. Like, just because they're always in schools. You won't catch just one random one. It seems like they're always in schools. They love to hit erratic lures, and they jump all over the place, and they don't have any sharp fins. So they're about, for people who haven't really seen a ladyfish before, they're silver and can average in length from anywhere from 9 inches on average all the way up to maybe 20 inches, I would say, is like an average length of them. And you can use them. They're great baits because they're so long. They go down the hatch for a fish very easily. They don't have many spines.
Yeah, they're torpedo-shaped. They're very cylindrical, so they're not skinny and tall, and they're not short and fat. They're just like basically a shape of a cigar.
Exactly, exactly. They just go right down the fish's mouth, no problem. So I think that's how I would describe them. They're just a fun fish to catch in general, but make right. a phenomenal bait.
I think two things for me with a ladyfish is you describe them being in school, so they'll readily hit any type of lures or bait that swims in front of them.
Yes.
But because of their acrobatics, you know, they've actually got the name as a poor man's tarpon.
Yeah.
Because nobody really eats them because they're not that edible.
Uh-huh.
Just like a tarpon is not that edible. But they're small, but they just go so crazy and put up a hard fight. Weight underrated of a fish. But for me, usually, you know, I tell people all the time that if they're teaching children how to fish,
yes,
it's a fun fish just to keep them entertained because you don't need any fancy lures. No. I mean, we catch them a lot of times on just a bare jig head.
Right.
But I also, to help build confidence in people, whether it's a child, a new angler, or you're trying to introduce your wife into bettering her craft, or your wife is teaching her husband how to fish and better his
yeah,
craft.
Yeah, it's not always the man teaching his wife. Yeah,
you know, it's all the way around. But if you're trying to learn how to use lures and wanting to build a confidence in yourself on how a lure works, it's like the perfect fish for that because they hit so many different things that it helps build that confidence in people to use that kind of lure and how to take that lure and transition it over into other species of fish to target with a lure.
That's a very good point, because like you said, you're not, sometimes when you're fishing, you're waiting for that one bite that could make the whole day. But with ladyfish, you miss one, who cares? You just kind of, you can take that time to better yourself as an angler and keep trying new things until you finally start hooking them, landing them, understand how to give a little bit of slack when they jump.
Right.
Which can transition to other fish, and it is a very good fish to practice on. I totally agree on that.
And the best part about them is that they make phenomenal bait too. So if you want to save a few to put in the freezer to use bait for another day, because you don't have to use them live, mm-hmm. you know, for purposes of catching them fresh or whatever, tarpon, they're a phenomenal bait for tarpon.
Yes.
But sharks eat them readily, live or dead or cut up. Mm-hmm. Large snook. Anyone who's looking to catch very large snook, we generally use a whole ladyfish, live or dead.
Yes.
And then, you know, cobia, we also use them offshore for grouper fishing and amberjack fishing. Not a lot of guys take them out there, believe it or not, but the guys that know, they're pretty impressive offshore. But the other thing they're great for is using them for cut bait. Uh-huh. We use them a lot of times for cut bait, especially for big redfish. When the redfish show up in the fall and even throughout the early winter, using like golf ball to bigger sized chunks of ladyfish casting out on the flats or under the bushes can produce some of the biggest redfish you'll ever see. And occasionally you'll get surprised and have a giant snook pick up that chunk of cut ladyfish.
I was just going to, when you're talking about all this ladyfish, it just popped in my head. The two biggest redfish I have caught in the harbor, the first one measured out at 43 inches. And I was not fishing for a redfish. I was fishing for a snook with a live ladyfish. That was probably, I'm not exaggerating, 20 inches long.
That's awesome.
And a 43-inch redfish ate that whole ladyfish. It blew my mind. And the second biggest redfish I ever caught in this harbor was 39 inches, and it was on a chunk of ladyfish, like you're saying, just throwing it near the bushes. And that was, so my two biggest redfish in this harbor came on live ladyfish and chunk of ladyfish. So
right.
You're spot on.
Right. And then the other thing is you don't have to use just chunks. You can butterfly them, and you know, where you're cutting out the vertebrae. Uh-huh. Yeah, say that 12 times, I guess.
Vertebra.
Yeah, exactly. Nice, I like that. So you basically have a head and these two fillets that are flapping in the current, whether you're drifting or bottom fishing, gives it a whole lot of articulation to it, which makes it great, and it puts out a lot of scent for multiple species. But you can also take that and cut little pieces of that up and catch little snapper and other little things. You can use it just to chum with. You can start sitting there shredding it up to help draw in other bait fish or a larger fish.
Nice.
So it's kind of, ladyfish is underrated because of all the different facets that it can be, from a bait fish to an actual, I'm going to give it game fish status personally,
because
I'm not really a fish snob. So I am a fish snob sometimes. There are species that I just name.
So but everybody, take your pictures of ladyfish and bring them to Frank's and show Robert.
Absolutely. I'm good with that, because it's an awesome fish to catch, and they just get way underrated for all of its abilities.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I was going to say, in the fall, or when we start transitioning into winter here, which is not really what a lot of you guys up north experience, the fish feed heavily, and these ladyfish get in very big schools, and what they feed on are another bait fish, which I think is like a very overlooked bait fish as well, mm-hmm. and that is our glass minnows.
Right. Well, and I think the reason why they get overlooked is because they're so small.
Yeah, you can't really put them on a hook.
I mean, you'd have to put them on, you'd have to pretend you're crappie fishing and use a little tiny hair hook.
Yes.
But, and glass minnows, what's the real name of glass minnows?
Anchovy.
Bay anchovy.
Yep.
Yep. So, and a lot of people aren't aware of that.
Right. No one really makes it. Yeah. I was just going to explain what a glass minnow was, because the glass minnow is like a common name for them. And they're called that because if you hold one in your hand, they're basically transparent.
Yeah.
You can see through their body, except for this silver line that goes down from the head to the tail. But that's why they're called glass minnows, because you can see straight through the meat. It's pretty. They're pretty cool little fish.
They are. They're really pretty, actually, when you think about it.
Yes. You can see through their meat. How cool is that?
And that solid piece of aluminum foil lateral line that runs right down through the center of their body is just super neat to see.
Exactly. It almost looks like too perfect. It is very cool to like actually...
I mean, if those things got big, people would mount them because they are beautiful looking.
They are. But they're like... What would you say is the biggest one you've seen in the harbor?
2.5 inches.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, pretty small.
Yeah, you can barely cast net them, but they come in such... I don't know, there's so many around that's what the ladyfish feed on. And
a lot of fish do, you know. I think that it's not necessarily a bait item for us to use for bait, but it is a giant, huge food source that feeds all of Charlotte Harbor as a whole, you know, because I think that's one of the major prey items for everything from pinfish, snapper, mackerel.
Yes, mackerel snook, everywhere, yes.
Tarpon even come up through them and just open their mouths like how a whale comes through.
And gets all the plankton, right?
And gets all the plankton. I think tarpon do the same thing. We call it slurping when they do that because they'll just come up and inhale a whole mouthful of those glass minnows, and occasionally they eat the ladyfish that are mixed in with it.
Yes,
you know, but everything's out there on that thing, and that usually starts, like you said, you know, late middle fall.
Yeah,
and it's amazing to be out there, you know. And I told it to a friend of mine, I don't know, several years ago, because we were out there, and there was about a 4 square mile area going from my side of the canal to your side of my side of the harbor to your side of the harbor, all the way up to the 41 bridge. So it's about four miles squared off, roughly.
Yeah.
And it was nothing but an entire... It looked like it was raining. It was all glass minnows with ladyfish and tarpon blowing up in them, with an occasional Spanish mackerel and occasional little baby bull shark coming through thrashing. I mean, it was a sheer feeding frenzy. Yes. Going on.
Yeah.
And I looked at my buddy and I said, you know, I am really, really glad that I cannot hear fish scream, because what's going on right now is absolutely terrifying, and it would just turn me off to this.
All the glass minnows screaming for their lives out there.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, what was that, Nemo, where everyone's like, run! You know, and then fish are pushing on the net trying to get away. And this was long before Nemo came out when that happened. It was just like, it was pretty wild, you know, but you know, we don't realize how important all of these different food items that we both utilize for bait and just to keep our function of our harbor healthy. You know, every one of these fish play different roles in the healthiness of the harbor itself, you know, to keep our fish populations up.
Yes.
You know, and you know, red tide last year really hurt Southwest Florida. The news hurt it more than anything else. I'm not saying it was the worst red tide. It wasn't the weakest by any means. But everyone jumped on the bandwagon of, say, you know, the snook and the redfish and the trout got really, really killed. And they did get it bad. But nobody ever talked about the amount of bait fish got destroyed in it. I mean, we had very little greenbacks or scaled sardines in the harbor last year. It had very few thread fins. Pinfish got decimated. Yeah. I mean, we went 6 months where you couldn't pay for a pinfish out there if you wanted to.
Wow.
You know, so there's a lot of different effects of that.
Yeah. And I was going to say, transitioning from the glass minnows, you did touch on this next bait fish, even though it's not necessarily a fish, just like a shrimp isn't a fish. And this is, I feel like, a very underrated or overlooked species of crustacean, and that is a blue crab.
Yeah, the blue crab's definitely way, way underrated.
So, underrated, and I just want to put this comparison out there. Like, if you give me a crab and shrimp to eat, I love shrimp. Mm-hmm. I'll go to the crab, just myself, because it's sweeter, there's, like, more meat in it.
Right.
I myself prefer crab over shrimp, and I consider myself half fish. So,
nice.
So that's a valid point, everybody. No, but yeah. I just have had some crazy luck with crabs. I started utilizing them maybe like 7-8 years ago is when I started messing with them. I just don't like dealing with crabs, so it was a very big turnoff for me.
Well, they're number one, they're a pain.
Yes.
They are tricky to use. I don't care if they're live or frozen. They're hard to deal with because they have a super hard exoskeleton.
Yes.
So putting them on a hook is tricky.
Uh-huh.
It's also not nearly the instant gratification bait that you get out of shrimp or these other bait fish that we're talking about. This is
sit and wait kind of thing.
It's a sit and wait bait. It's also a little bit more of a specific species bait.
Yeah.
You know, you're eliminating some of your species of fish. You're definitely eliminating a lot of the little annoying little hobber-dobbers that I call them that just are bait thieves and beat your other stuff up because they're either too small or just can't take them on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so crabs are kind of a little bit more of a kind of user-specific bait. And whether it's and people look at blue crabs, they're like, oh, blue crab, well, those are giant. That's what you eat. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. Everything's boring small. So we use blue crabs from, you know, 2.5 inches from point to point to blue crabs all the way up to like 7 inches point to point that most people would want on their dinner plate instead.
Right. And this is a fun fact for everybody out there. Peak tarpon season, which is right around May, people are paying sometimes up to $4.50 for these little blue crabs. What are they, like 3 inches across?
3 inches point to point.
Point to point. And what does that amount to? Like $50 a dozen?
Roughly, yeah.
Just they're that prized of a bait because in those big tidal flushes we have during that time of the year, that's what the tarpon are primarily feeding on.
Yeah, you could throw 100 baits at them, but you throw one crab at them, they're probably going to hit that.
So
it's that drastic of a difference.
An itty-bitty crab is way more. You could buy maybe, what, 2 dozen big edible crabs for the price of a dozen of these itty-bitty crabs that have no meat in them, but it's just because they're that good for bait for big tarpon.
Absolutely.
But that was just a fun fact because when people actually know those numbers, it blows them away that people pay that much money for a crab.
It boggles their mind.
So, yeah, but that's not the only use of the small crab. It's also the big ones. You can cut them in half. They work. I've caught the most. I found like black drum are just suckers for crabs.
Yes.
They are absolute like suckers. They don't think twice. They go pick it up. And if there's a black drum in the area and you have a half a crab on, he will find your bait. It's that simple. Just sitting on the bottom.
Exactly. And probably an easy way that I can equate it to is you can throw a penny out on the ground in front of a store. A lot of people will walk past that penny.
Yes.
You throw a quarter out there on the ground, every person that walks by it is going to pick it up. Well, that's a black drum to a crab.
Yes, exactly.
They will not pass that. They might swim past a shrimp.
Yes, they definitely will.
But they will not swim past a crab.
Yes. And what's very closely related to a black drum is a red drum.
Yeah, that's like their first cousin.
Yes. And redfish, I have done this on the boat where we've had cut bait, whether it be thread fins, ladyfish, live greenbacks, and then I'll happen to have a crab or two with me, or we'll see one swimming on or like on the crawling on the ground on the flat. I'll scoop it up, have it, cut it in half, and throw it out, and that's the only bait that will catch us a redfish that day.
Absolutely.
So they are magical, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
they're worth the headache of dealing with.
They are worth the headache, and you know, they are a little expensive compared to shrimp, because let's say an average blue crab is like $2 or $3 a piece for bait versus a dozen shrimp or $3, you know. So but for specific scenarios, a blue crab is absolutely a must have at certain times of the year or for certain species.
Yes, definitely.
You know, it's amazing, and people just flip their lid when you tell them you're going to use blue crabs, because you know, we get a lot of people from the Northeast, where they're
Maryland,
and you know, that's all they grew up was eating crabs, and it's like, you're gonna use that for bait?
What?
Are you kidding?
You know? Do you know how good eating that is?
Yes, exactly. So, it is pretty entertaining, but they are sometimes seasonal and sometimes hard to get, so it's not always abundant in your local tackle shops or even going out and trying to catch them. At times, they do move around. I mean, you watch Deadliest Catch. And they'll put out 200 pots in the Arctic Ocean, or not the Bering Sea, and not catch a single crab, and then they move 2 miles to the north and they get a whole bunch of crabs. And it's kind of the same thing here. Our blue crabs do move a lot, so they're not always easy to find. But yeah, when you do, amazing, amazing bait.
Oh, yeah. Well, that concludes part two of talking about bait fish with Mr. Robert Lukowitz, manager at Fish and Franks. Hit me up at tarponworld.com. Send me an email at tarponworld@gmail.com and let us know what you like to hear, and we'll discuss more of it. Until next week, we'll see you.